It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And this actually makes a really interesting segue into what I was going to talk about this week, so that works out good.
Okay, good.
Hello, everyone. Glad everyone could be here today in church. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world, also available in Braille.
I'm glad we started doing that because, you know, it really opens up a lot of possibilities for our audience.
This is what I thought about. So have you ever, for the deaf, television and movies have this thing called closed captioning mm-hmm. for the hearing impaired. Right. Are you at all familiar with the equivalent they have with the blind?
No.
Visually descriptive service, I believe.
I've heard of that. Sure, yeah.
Have you ever experienced it?
Oh, no.
I have on several occasions. There are a couple of networks that break sometimes and just have that going. And it's TBS and Fox. And in fact, it may be tied into specific production companies because the times I've seen it most often are on episodes of Family Guy for some reason. To the degree that I think the first time I experienced it, I thought they were maybe making a joke. Hmm. And then I figured out that was... But I've also seen it on an episode of Big Bang Theory. I can only think of it on shows that I actually don't like and I'm not sure why I was watching them. But anyway, it's interesting. It's about exactly what you would expect.
Well, I don't know what to expect.
Somebody describes what happens on the screen.
But does everything stop for a second?
No.
So how they're stepping all over the lines and everything?
No, you sort of have to time it right. But in general, television doesn't move that fast.
Okay.
So somebody will say something, and then they'll say, walking across the room, or so-and-so looks up. And with Family Guy, it's weird, of course, because there's random shit. It's like a bald eagle appears out of nowhere, and... You know, but I was thinking the other day, I was like, we could do that, and I don't know if it would be any different. I feel like that might just be already what we're doing, except we could describe, like, if we lean forward or something like that.
Okay.
I'm like, I feel like the visually descriptive service for our podcast is just our podcast.
Yep, pretty much.
So we're already... accessible blind people, you're welcome. For those of you just joining us, basically here's how the show works. We have a hat, it's magical, has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and people like you write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Hey, baby.
What?
Give me a word that starts with E.
Elephant.
We, it's elephant servants. not sure it worked.
Extraordinary.
Ooh, extraordinary
servants.
Yeah,
we never used that one.
And then John Favreau's 5-year-old says, it didn't land.
Eclectic.
I think I've used that one too. We only needed one. Thank you, baby.
You're very welcome.
All right. Anyway, me and William draw the note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. And we just did a show a few minutes ago because I'm going to be on vacation next week.
Is this a mystery or are we in the future?
Man.
That's a pretty awesome question.
I love our producer. I just love her.
We're in the future right now.
And you're Tony.
I am Tony. Oh, Jesus Christ. Christ.
And I'm, no, you're, I'm not Jesus Christ. I'm William.
Did we even... Yeah, oh my God. I don't know what's happening.
And this is episode 228.
Jeez. Ridiculous. Yeah. We're totally recording. Baby.
What?
The last episode went for 23 minutes before I said hello.
Yeah.
Like, we're off the fucking rails tonight.
Of the crazy train.
Nothing. I'm just, I forgot to say I was Tony and do the whole thing.
No, he for a second he thought I was Jesus Christ. I don't know
what the problem is. Wait.
He was your grandpa.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, it's an easy mistake to make, I guess.
How long have you known me?
Not as long as I've known Jesus Christ.
Touche. I gotta give that one to you.
Yeah, you do.
All right, then. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we may be witnessing the producer being born again. Live on the air.
So send in those dollars, because we got to keep this ministry going.
We got to send Bibles for African children to eat.
Dig deep into those pockets.
All right. Are you talking to me or
Jesus Christ?
I'm talking to you.
Jesus Christ. We both love you too.
Thanks, William.
But only one died for your sins. So.
Me and Jesus. William is fairly indifferent.
Wow.
My microphone smells funny. Anyway. So, yeah, so for us, this is just our second hour, so we're getting a little crazy. For you guys, it's been a week. I'm in Virginia right now reading. It's going to be an interesting trip this year.
Yeah?
No children.
Oh, how is that happening?
Various reasons.
Summer camp and such.
The other alternate vacations, work didn't work out. And stuff. I mean, it's not just the children, like, are being locked in a trunk and everybody's coming. No, people aren't coming. Some people aren't coming. And those people happen to include all the people who have children.
Okay.
So the youngest person there will be Steph, who's over 30. That's what I told her. I was like, it's just a week of swearing and drinking.
Mm.
Or 2 weeks in some cases. But no, probably not. But I do think it'll
Jesus
be...
Jesus Christ isn't going.
Wine. I do think it'll be interesting. The whole Virginia Beach vacation is very laid back, very low stress.
As you've often said.
I feel like... It'll be even less, more so this time, because the little stress you have is, you know, keeping an eye on the children, taking care of the children, like, you know,
entertaining
the children, and that's going to go. So it'll be interesting. I want to make sure my mother-in-law has a good time. I'm a little worried about her. I think she's a little sad that none of her grandbabies are going to be there.
Yeah.
But I think she'll enjoy it, and hopefully, yeah, it'll just be a little more chill, and that'll be fun. And I am her favorite, so.
Really?
I'm my mother-in-law's favorite child.
Mm.
So anyway, how will your week be?
I think I'll have a fairly uneventful week as compared to the last several weeks. Yeah, it'll be nice to get a break.
Yeah.
We're going to be going to, okay, let me think. When people hear this, it'll be the weekend that's coming up. We're going to the Iowa Storytellers Festival in Clear Lake. Now, I didn't even know.
In Clear Lake?
Yeah, I didn't even know they had the Iowa Storytellers Festival there. They call it the Iowa Storytellers Festival, but I don't think it's something that actually a lot of Iowans know about.
Oh, I assumed it was just a festival of telling stories about Iowa, but it could be held anywhere.
No, it's a storytellers festival held in Iowa.
Iowa.
And apparently it's the only one, so they just call it the Iowa Storytellers Festival. We'll be going up Friday evening because there is a paddle boat, you know, like an old-fashioned riverboat paddle boat, that does excursions on the lake called Lady of the Lake, go figure. And they're going to have a special program the night before the festival, which is on Saturday, where there's going to be storytelling on the boat, particularly ghost stories,
ooh,
which I love,
you
as
do
you
love
know.
Ghost stories.
As you know. So we're going to go up the night before. We're going to enjoy that excursion. Then we're going to do things on Saturday. I mean, this is the first time I've ever been to it, so I don't really know what it's going to be like. And the whole reason we can go is because there's a lake house. Her family has a lake house up there, and we have a place to stay. So there's, you know, virtually no expense outside of paying for the boat excursion and a few other things. You know, I look forward to it. I hope it'll be...
That should be awesome.
Hope it'll be a good time.
I'll be very curious, because that's something I would like to, but I won't be back in time.
Well, you know, there's a big national storytelling thing over in East Tennessee.
I did not know that.
Well, that's where Sarah went to school over.
Oh.
I think the town that has the classes and whatever is... I forget.
Where she got a master's in storytelling
or something. It's very nearby where that festival is.
That would make sense.
And I've never been to that festival, although as soon as I learned about it several years ago, I've always wanted to go. But, I've never really been to any kind of... The only storytelling kind of convention or events that I've ever been to are the puppeteering ones. I went to a couple of those, which were great. But obviously that was a very particular kind of storytelling, which I was very much into at the time, and I still am, I guess. But I imagine that, you know, if you were a puppeteer, you could attend or have a panel or an exhibit at these storytelling things too.
Possibly.
Because they're more general, you know. Yeah. So I hope it's fun. I hope it's something that I enjoy enough to maybe continue to go to them each year, since I have a, you know, if they're going to be in Clear Lake that often.
Totally.
It's a long ways, though. It's a 3-hour drive. But, like, having a free place to stay is a big plus. What about you? What's your week going to be like?
I'm going to be in Virginia Beach. I'm going to be reading.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm going to be hanging out, playing games, swimming in the ocean, trying to keep the Weight Watchers. That'll be fun. But I need to talk about what I did before, because I saw a lot of movies.
Yeah, that's right. Let's hear about all your movies that you didn't see in the theater.
So many movies. No, none of them in the theater. They were all on my TV. I just remembered one that's maybe the biggest deal, so I'm glad I remembered it.
All right.
Trish and I finally saw Gone Girl.
Oh.
Have you seen Gone Girl?
Not yet. We might see it. We've heard
Have
a lot of things
Have you read
it.
The book?
Oh, no.
I will say, for people who read the book, because the book was a big hit also.
Did you read the book?
I did not read the book. Oh. But I looked up, like I do, I looked up a bunch of stuff afterwards. The screenplay was written by the author of the book.
Okay.
And the plots are almost identical. There's a couple of really tiny changes, but it's essentially the exact same thing.
Okay.
So that's good. Producer and I had a really weird reaction. It's a really good movie. Really well made. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
We both really did not enjoy watching it.
Mm.
And still not entirely sure why. I definitely think there's that thing again of sympathy. Everybody in it, I don't like anybody.
Right.
And so I don't really care what happens to them. But it's also just, I don't know. I feel like for me, and this sounds weird, I feel like it does a disservice to marriage in the movie. Because at its heart, and no spoilers for anything else, it's about a really bad marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trish and I have a really good marriage.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, it's not like I expect most people to relate to the one in the movie, because it's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, there's something almost sort of profane about it to me. And I'm like, that's not marriage. Which is weird, because I mean, you know, when I think of, let me think what marriages look like in most movies I see. Yeah, there's tons of shitty ones, but this one, I don't know, this somehow sparked me. But it's really well filmed, great music, well acted all around, a couple of very surprising casting choices where, like, with supporting characters where they showed up and I'm like, really, them? And they commended themselves greatly.
Yeah.
So that was really fun. And it's a very intricate sort of mystery puzzle kind of thing. And it wasn't quite like what I thought. Because, I mean, everybody, the premise basically, Ben Affleck's a dude and one day his wife's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows what happened.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, people are suspicious. Maybe he did something to her, and hijinks ensue.
As often happens.
Yes. And in my mind, the big twist is, well, what really happened? And so we're going to go through this movie, and then we're going to, what really happened?
Mm.
No. You find out what really happened about halfway through the movie.
Mm.
And it's why it happened, and how it happened, and then what happens after that. That's the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long movie. It's like 2.5 hours. So, I mean, I guess I recommend it to people because it's a good movie.
Good film
craft. I really didn't. Well, and interesting, yeah. I mean, I suppose. I just really did not enjoy it. But, I mean, like, my boss loved it.
Well, let me change the subject here a little before I forget because I want to ask you this. Did you see the new, after Comic-Con, did you see the new preview for Batman vs. Superman?
I did, in fact.
Okay. Do you have thoughts on that? Because you're smiling about it, so I don't know.
I think it's going to be such a mess.
Oh, yeah. That's what I think. After seeing the preview, there's two things I walk away from with it. Maybe three. 2.5. I'm not going to like anything that has to do with Superman. I can tell already. Wonder Woman looks like a total throwaway character, which...
What? You mean that woman who was on the screen for 1 second?
That's what I mean by the half bit, because they didn't even give you enough information to decide what Wonder Woman was going to be like.
You saw her stumble against a wall, clearly in some, like, fight scene or something.
Well, but there were a couple times where she was in a red dress, and...
Oh, I think I missed that.
Yeah, it was easy to miss.
Aquaman, not there at all, which is supposedly in the movie. But, and it's fucking Jason Momoa, so I wouldn't miss him. He's just not there.
But I am looking forward to all the Batman stuff. I really am.
And all the Bruce Wayne stuff, because there's a lot of Bruce Wayne stuff.
Yeah, I like what I've seen with Bruce Wayne so far. Now, I'm not a big fan, as you know. I'm not a big fan of the whole Dark Knight Returns, Frank Miller thing. From what I've seen of what Ben Affleck's doing with Bruce Wayne so far, and I know it's not a lot, but I like it. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to like Jeremy Irons playing Alfred, too. I think I'm going to like that.
I see potential there.
But I think the Superman stuff, I'm going to hate it, just like I didn't like the movie.
It's hilarious because somebody at work is telling me, because there's a bit, and a tower falls, which also is amazing, by the way, because I saw the cracked response thing, and the headline later is Wayne Tower Falls or whatever, dozens killed. And they were like, really? Wow, that went really well then. Only dozens from that? That's, with a skyscraper falls? That's amazing. But a guy at work is like, well, you know, that shot that's supposed to be Superman did that. And I'm like, yeah, no, I got that. And I said, but you realize whatever happens, Superman didn't become a bad guy. Like, either he was deceived or mind controlled or it was a terrible accident. Like, there's no tension here of like, oh my God, why is Superman... It's not that he suddenly is a jackass.
No.
Or if he is, it's because somebody shoved plaid kryptonite up his butt and it makes him a jackass. I mean, this isn't a change in the Superman
character. No. This is all the destruction that was wrought at the end of the first movie. We get to see that some of that, we get to see what that was like for some of the people on the ground, including Bruce himself. Yeah. And it obviously killed people Bruce cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And now Bruce doesn't even care what his personality or his motives are. All he cares about is he's this super powerful being that has the potential to do great harm.
Yeah.
And that's all he needs to know.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of interesting. I mean, it's not surprising or deep or original.
No, it's all pretty
standard. It's what everybody said was probably going to happen. But I like the way it looks like Ben Affleck is interpreting. He's taking this thing that I think isn't sophisticated or surprising or original, but I think he's going to do something that makes it look like it has some depth.
But of course, if you look at it in a certain light, what's happening is they're taking all the shit from Man of Steel that just pissed everybody off,
and it's going to make Bruce.
What if it really was a thing?
Well, what if Bruce Wayne was one of those angry people?
What if that wasn't just an oversight on our part? Yeah. No, because that's bullshit. Like, they didn't. There's no way they planned this before Man of Steel. They were like, oh, crap, people noticed that might have killed thousands of people. Well, shit, let's run with that. That was totally our plan for the next one, because it'll make Bruce Wayne mad. Seriously.
It's going to be... I think it's going
to be a hot
mess. It's going to be terrible. I'm still going to go watch it.
Yeah, you know.
And there's a good chance... Because here's the thing about Ben Affleck. When he was first cast for this, and I don't know... I'm pretty sure I said this on the podcast. Maybe I didn't, but my opinion was there were roles that I liked him in, roles I loved him.
I would not say Ben Affleck is a bad actor.
No,
I've seen him in some amazing.
He was great. I thought he was great in Good Will Hunting. I loved him in the movie that's about George Reeves, who played Superman on television.
Hmm.
I forget what it was called, but he was great in that. I've seen things that I didn't really care for him in.
Well, he's got leading man action movie syndrome. I mean, he gets put in a lot of stuff because he's handsome and he draws money.
He was good in Argo.
He's not a character actor, but he's done some great stuff. State of Play, he had a kind of small part in and did amazing.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, he could probably do this. And
yeah, I have no problem with the idea of Ben Affleck.
I thought... The scenes of the preview or whatever that featured him, I thought he's going to bring some really interesting stuff to this role, and I can't wait to see it. But I'm going to be so disappointed with almost everything else, I can tell already. But whatever.
I'm pretty confident I will never see this movie.
All right. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. We were talking. Ben Affleck.
No, totally. Did you see the San Diego Comic-Con shit for Green Inferno?
No. Green Inferno.
Green Inferno.
What is that even?
It's a new movie.
I mean, I mostly got the DC stuff.
That Eli Roth is making.
No, I don't even know what that is. Eli Roth is who?
He's the guy who made the Hostel movies. That's probably the best he makes torture porn, mostly.
Oh.
He makes Hostel, like a youth hostel. Yeah, like they made three of those movies. And they were pretty popular.
Never even heard of them.
And this movie is... And it starts, it's one of those we're bad white people horror movies. So, like, it's all about the deforestation of South America and the rainforest and everything. Okay. And it even starts with, like, stats and shit like that. But then there's these young people who are going to go, I don't even know what they're going to, but they're going to go down and help or protest or some shit because they care about the rainforest. And the plane crashes and they get caught by these natives. And these natives do full-on, like, cannibal holocaust, scary native bullshit, racist as all fuck.
Yeah.
And what's hilarious is it looks like, and it's like, oh, God, what, really? It's the 21st century. Are we really pulling the scary savages in the dark jungle bullshit?
Yeah.
And the response, of course, is people are like, but God, you don't know. Eli Roth actually filmed that with, that's a real tribe of natives who had never been appeared on camera anywhere before this. Which, first of all, don't know that I believe that. But I'm going to set that aside for a second. Yeah, let's assume it's true. That doesn't make it any more racist. Like, you could take a black man and have him do an old Al Jolson routine, still fucking racist, even though it's not makeup. Like, what the hell?
Well, and also, it's about exploitation. It's not about what's really happening or not happening or whatever. So that's a whole other level of
fucking hilarious
consideration. Though, it's not really about.
Who knows what happened there? Anyway, okay, so I saw Gone Girl. I recommend it. I didn't like it, but whatever. What?
Tell William about the mosquitoes.
Ooh. So. I'm about to tell you something.
Okay.
This is...
First off, let's ask him, do you like mosquitoes?
How do you feel about mosquitoes?
How do I feel about them?
I don't know. She's telling me to ask this. I don't know where she's going with this part.
I am not a fan of mosquitoes, no.
Would you like there to be fewer of them?
Along with just about everybody else I know, yeah, I probably would be okay with there being fewer mosquitoes.
Such a deal we have for you. All right. So... Somebody made some mosquitoes. They genetically modified them.
Yeah.
So that I believe the way it works is their offspring will have a lifespan too short to reproduce.
Okay.
And whatever the genetic marker is, I guess it can't spread that far, but their offspring will be unable to reproduce. So then sharp decrease in mosquito population. At least that's the plan.
Okay.
And they're planning on using this in places where there's like major dengue fever outbreaks and stuff, but they're going to test it in Florida because of course they are. Now here's the thing. I can't tell you anything specific about this that bothers me. I can tell you this is essentially the start of 40% of post-apocalyptic fiction.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, that's right. That you decide.
This borders on being the plot to Jurassic Park. Yeah, I mean, Seriously? We're going to release him in the wild, see what happens. We've genetically modified this one. Exactly. If they made a movie of this, we'd be like, really? No, people aren't. No, no, it's happening. Fucking A. And I don't know what it is. I mean, the most obvious answer is they decrease the population too much and it throws off the balance of the ecosystem. But there could also be other shit. I mean, I don't know. This is some post-apocalypse. This is how the zombies happen and shit. I mean, really.
Well.
This is weird.
Yeah, I know. If you subscribe to the right news sources and if you can sort through, because if you find a news source that's going to tell you a story like that, it'll almost always tell you stories that are complete nonsense. So you have to get through the stuff that is ridiculous. But if you subscribe to the right news sites, you hear stories like this all the time that you can go verify with other places, so you know they're not just making it up.
Yeah, I subscribed to my wife, and she told me.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad science out there. A lot of bad science.
All right, so, movies. I watched 3 full-length documentaries and 1 tiny documentary. All about stand-up comedy. Mm. Or really about comedy in general. First, we watched, last weekend, a movie called When Jews Were Funny.
Okay.
It's on Netflix, people. You can check it out. It is interesting. It's not... I was a little ambivalent because it's not... The movie is not what it purports to be or even what I think the filmmaker was trying for. Because it sort of bills itself and sets itself up as an exploration of Jewish comedy and Jewish comedians in history and what that means and is that a real thing? Is there such a thing as Jewish comedy?
Yeah.
And why do there seem to be so many Jewish comedians and that kind of thing? And what does that mean for the future and all that kind of stuff? It's what it purports to be, what it tries to be, what it's going for. It's not what happens.
Mm.
And in fact, the more I talk about it, the more it sounds better. I kind of like want to rewatch it. Because what happens, and you come to the realization of this partially through how it plays out and partially because the interviewees start to come to this realization as well. What it is the filmmaker who's 61, married to a 38-year-old woman, has a 2-year-old child. He is Jewish. His wife is not. His child is not. He has not been practicing Judaism for a long time. And he is feeling this sense of loss and concern for both himself and his child that what he experienced growing up, which was a certain sort of comedy, not necessarily even professional comedy, although that's some of it, but even just within the family and everything, that he intrinsically ties into his sense of Judaism, and that is going away, or that he doesn't have a way to duplicate that now for his own child. And to a certain degree, it also even just becomes about his guilt about sort of no longer practicing Judaism. And that's a very different movie.
Yeah.
But that being said, it was still good, and it has a whole lot of comics going back to, I think, Shecky Green's in this, who I totally did not know was still alive. But a lot of older guys you recognize, and then a lot of more modern ones. Mark Maron's in it, Judy Gold's in it, Andy Kindler's in it, Bob Einstein, tons of guys. And it's kind of fun to watch for that. And there's a lot of back and forth with the filmmaker. So I guess it's worth time, especially because it's Netflix. So it's free, you know, whatever. But it's good. I mean, I tend to always like documentaries about comedy.
Yeah.
Because I'm a geek on that, and I like the craft. And there's a lot of talk about that. And then we watched one that I was trying to get people for on Netflix, and I found out it's not on Netflix. It's on Amazon, and I think you have to pay money for it. So be prepared for that. But called Why We Laugh. And it's a documentary about female comics and what that means and all that. And this one's very tricky.
Why is that?
Because this is possibly, definitely one of, if not the worst made documentary I've seen.
Mm.
It's a disaster. It's it's incredibly orderly in a way that just sort of ruins the momentum. The pacing is really awkward. It has these little interstitials, and it's like, here's a new topic or question, and we have to have every interviewee tell us their response to that, and only so the thing almost comes out like a survey in a way. And it's just, it's very disjointed in the, and but the raw material, the content behind it, the interviews are gold and cannot be, you will not get together topic conversation on similar topics of all these interviewees of all these different female comedians from all sorts, actors, stand-up comics, sketch, old, young. It's just an amazing demographic. And it's worth it for that. Because, I mean, we get back to Judy Gold's in both of them. Kathleen Madigan's in this. Joan Rivers is heavily in this. They actually bill her as the narrator. I'm not sure that quite works. Kim Wayans shows up. Some stand-ups I actually don't even know. Who's the woman who hosts, whose line is it anyway now? How did I lose? Aisha Tyler, who I absolutely adore. Just some amazing names that have some really insightful stuff to say about what it means to be a female comic in this society, why you would be a comic as a female, how you portray that, what you can, what the problems with that and the good things about that, what that has meant over the, Kathy Griffin is in there, who has some really insightful things to say, much to my surprise, because she knows the hell out of me, but she's, Judy Tenuta's fucking in it, didn't know she was still alive or mattered, and to be honest, we could have left her out, but it's really fascinating to see her and be like, holy crap, Judy Tenuta, she pulls out the accordion at one point. So the content is absolutely priceless, so I do recommend watching it, but be prepared, whoever made the documentary is an idiot. Because it's put together really horribly. Then, for date night, Trish tossed us out a couple of them. Morgan Spurlock, again, this is on Amazon, again, it costs money. Morgan Spurlock made a TV show called A Day in the Life Of. And it is these little half-hour things. And a camera crew just follows somebody around for a day. Somebody famous. And there was one that had Marc Maron. So we watched it.
Okay.
It was pretty cool to watch that. You have him, he does an episode of his podcast in his garage, and then he ends up doing a set at the Comedy Store that night, and it was kind of neat to see. So that was fun. But then we watched another comedy documentary called Misery Loves Comedy.
Okay.
And it was done by Kevin Pollak.
Okay.
And two interesting things to say about this. One, the style and the layout and the sort of arc to things was almost identical to the way it was done in that Why We Laugh one I just mentioned that I hated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I hated how it was done.
Mm-hmm.
This was done almost the same way. Two, and for me this is saying something. I don't say this lightly. I'm pretty sure this is my absolute favorite documentary on comedy I've ever seen. It's really good. It has a downside. The demographics are shit. Out of the, there's at least 30 people that show up in this thing. Like four of them are women. None of them are not white or Jewish.
Well,
none of them.
And it doesn't have to be that way because
absolutely
there are plenty
not.
Of
the ones I saw earlier proved that.
Yeah, you could easily have half the cast be female.
Absolutely.
At least, and have people of color represented.
Yeah.
Easily.
So that was disappointing. But Kevin Pollak knows what the fuck he's doing. And Kevin Pollak can get people. I mean, they had fucking Steve Coogan, I'm pretty sure, in the UK. Like, this had the look that it was done over years. And it was all friends of Kevin Pollak. And Kevin Pollak knows everybody. He's been around in this stuff forever. He's been in, like, 112 movies or something. And he did it right. So there were sort of, like, leading questions. And there were these things, like, let's talk about this thing. But then he would let people go as long as it was interesting and it made sense in the moment. And like, there was one where I don't even remember what he's in, but Jim Jefferies, who's an Australian comic who is making a name for himself here right now. He had a TV show on FX called Legit. I don't really like his stuff, but he had a lot of interesting stuff to say here. And at one point he kind of got off on this tangent about raising his children and mostly how he came from, and is very proud that he came from a working class background, but now he has his kids and he's really wealthy and so they don't have that, and how he deals with that and stuff. And at a certain point he says, I'm sorry, you didn't ask me about parenting, but that's how I think parenting worked. And then he went up and I'm like, and they left it in because it was awesome. And it just puts it's put together really well, and it has a lot of people and they have a lot of good stuff to say. And I just really enjoyed it. And it's really funny in places. But it's really informative and interesting. And has a lot of awesome people in it.
Cool.
So I highly recommend Misery Loves Comedy. It's very interesting. And it got me jonesing. And that's one of those things. I've kind of come to peace with a lot of this. I finally figured out why I am not a stand-up.
Why is that?
Because people have always said that I could, and I feel like I maybe could. Well, the short answer is, I had too good of a childhood. There's a certain need that's not there, and I think it had to do with the tremendous amount of sort of love and support I had growing up, which is awesome, but it screwed up me being a stand. Like, there's certain compulsion that's built into that. I like being funny, but like, the way you become a stand-up is pretty straightforward, as people have said. Come up with some jokes. Go to an open mic. Perform your set. Then go back. Actually, Paula Poundstone said, she said this, she said, come up with jokes, maybe 5 minutes, go to an open mic, do your little 5-minute set, then go sit down somewhere, maybe have a drink or whatever, and reflect on what you did. Now do that again hundreds and hundreds of times.
Right.
And a lot of times it's going to suck and you're going to bomb and people are going to boo. Like, they had some, this last one, the Misery Loves Comedy, had some amazing stories of bombing, which are hilarious in retrospect. But yeah. I'm just like, no, I feel like I don't. And that's the thing, is they bomb, but they had to go back and do it.
Yep, yep.
And I'm like, and I don't have that. And it seems to come from a certain shape or size of hole inside of you from when you are young that needs to be filled in a certain way. And I don't appear to have that hole.
Mm.
And so in some ways, I guess that's good. But I do feel sad because I feel like I could have done pretty decent at it.
Mm.
I feel like the potential is there. That was a big thing in one of the documentaries, talking about you can't teach funny. You can learn to execute it better, but you're just sort of born funny or not. And for whatever else, I think I was born funny. I'm pretty funny.
You're funny.
And so I feel like I could have run with that. But, you know, I don't like doing stuff. So let's hat this place up.
All right.
Don't drop it.
Okay.
What do we got?
Anonymous wants to know, how many digits of pi can you remember?
3.14159 27, I want
to
say.
You've already gone several more than I can ever remember.
How far could you have gone?
3.14. I mean, after that, I just can never remember.
I think The Simpsons gave me 3.14159. I think The Simpsons gave me that. Because there is a Simpsons where they do one of the double dutch routines. Is here are the digits that make pi. 3.14159. The last two, which I'm uncertain of, and this is, okay, this is a security risk here, but they don't listen, so I don't care. People, friends of mine, who I sometimes visit and sometimes have electronic equipment at their house, their Wi-Fi password is pi to a certain number of digits.
Okay.
And it's 3.14159. And I think it's two more digits. And I never remember what those are. So anytime I have a new device, I have to be like, what is it? And they're all nerds, so they just sort of recite it by heart.
No. I mean, you know, I, when it comes to numbers and formulas, I mean, I sometimes can't even remember the names of things. Like,
yeah.
I think there was one time even on the podcast, you made some joke about Avogadro's number, and I completely forgot what it was or what it meant.
That was just me name dropping.
Well, I mean... But I mean, these are things that I know. I mean, once you say, well, it's the, oh yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah, those are things that you knew. But a lot of that stuff disappears.
But you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, I'm very bad at remembering it.
I've told you, I like remember all the Simpsons now, right?
Yeah.
And that I've lost other shit.
Yeah, you told me.
Like
that.
Just recently I'm coming to terms with, and I think part of it is because FXX is just running them like all the time, which by the way, not a terrible idea. They originally started, they had this big marathon where they, like, showed every single one in order. It was, like, 8 days or something. Mm. And now, they do these little blocks of, like, 3 or 4 hours, like, 5 nights a week.
Mm.
And then occasionally, if it's a holiday, they'll do another marathon, like, over a weekend or whatever. Mm. And at first, it's like, oh, my God, really? Come on. Because it's always sad when a network is like, well, they don't have anything, so they just run reruns. But I'm like, no. Those are fucking awesome, and they're fucking varied. And if we get a few more seasons, you could probably make a network that was just, we show every Simpsons over and start over again, 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
And it would probably get enough business that you could stay afloat with advertisers. Because I watch the shit out of them, I'll tell you that. And I remember so much.
I know.
And it's weird. And it's fascinating, and it's a little comforting, because I think we talked about this a long time ago. For me, and I don't think I'm unusual in this, I'm of the age, The Simpsons has been my culture. I mean, I knew The Simpsons as a kid, mm-hmm. and have known it my whole life, and so much comes out of that, or so much was treated, like, South Park has that to a degree too, but it's a little different. There's just something so all-encompassing about, and so many, to the degree that so many ideas in my head tie to that. So many lines, like, oh, that's a funny quip from The Simpsons that applies here, or somebody's explaining something to me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like when The Simpsons had the, like, it's just...
Well, and a lot of culture was filtered through the show, too.
And, yes, a lot of culture was filtered through the show, but a lot of culture was also grown from the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fascinating, and I'm right, I'm slightly younger than, or I'm slightly older than would be perfect, because it came out and I would have been 12.
Sure.
But you don't want to go too much younger, you know, the ideal is...
Then you're not going to get it.
The producer might be right on it, because she would have been, like, 7. So that might be, I don't know, I remember not liking it when it started, so maybe I am right about the right age, because it took me a year or two to like it. And then it's just always been there. And that's really weird to me.
And there's nothing else like it.
No, there is no comparison.
That's right.
You can come close sometimes with other shows and stuff that went for a long time.
Well, and even if I watched tons and tons of television, which I don't, but if I did, I wouldn't have a show like that. There wouldn't have been a show that started when I was 12 that was still going on now.
No. I mean, there's soap operas. But those don't have the cultural relevance.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
At this point, the archetypes do.
Yeah.
And the stereotypes. But there's no... Society as a whole isn't going to be, oh yeah, like Young and the Restless. You know, that's not going to happen. But if you say The Simpsons... In fact, if you say, oh yeah, like on The Simpsons, or The Simpsons did that, or remember that from The Simpsons? Either they're going to say, yeah, totally, oh yeah. Which I think is the majority of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But of the time that's not that, the vast majority is going to be like, I don't remember that episode, or maybe it was later and I didn't see it. Very seldom are you going to be, oh yeah, no, I never watched The Simpsons. Or, what's The Simpsons? Yeah, or nothing like that.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, the most separated from The Simpsons is still remarkably close to The Simpsons.
Well, I mean, even when it first started, I watched the very first episode at a friend's house, didn't have a TV.
Yeah.
But I had a friend who watched it, and and they were excited to watch it, so they had me over to watch the very first episode, and we went there every Sunday, it was on Sundays,
yeah,
to watch it, probably for the first couple seasons. And then I'd see it at my brother Scott's house after that, so I've actually seen a lot of Simpsons episodes, even though I've never watched Simpsons on my own television, yeah, set.
I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, my parents might be one of those rare people. I'm not sure they've ever seen The Simpsons.
Oh, really?
We didn't watch it together.
Now that I think about it, my dad might never have seen, like, it or watched it.
I still think they're going to know a lot of references.
Yeah, that's possible.
That's weird. I don't know. I find, because it is so wholly unique as a cultural phenomenon, I find it amazing. Also, I really like the show.
Yeah, it's pretty unique.
Check out shit from more recent. We all gave up at a certain point, and I gave up. I don't watch every Sunday. I haven't for a long time. But check out some of the more recent stuff. It is not losing its edge, and it's the finesse level has just increased amazingly.
Really?
Before, it was clever, but comparatively, if you go back, even, and I'm not talking, like, everybody has that, like, the first five or six seasons, a lot of people don't like as well as later stuff.
Mm.
But even if you go further, you know, go to season 14 or 15,
mm-hmm,
and compare it to stuff you're seeing in the 20s, and it seems a little heavy-handed. Like, there's such fun. They slip in so many jokes, and the jokes per minute kind of thing gets really crazy. It gets 30 Rock-ish in its, like, layers of humor.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and then just classic shit. I don't even remember, but they go to China, and Lisa's trying to explain to Homer. He's like, Dad, they're communists. And he says, communists? Then why am I seeing rudimentary free markets? That's great. I love that line. Brilliant line. They throw in shit like that all the time. The whole damn episode where they were going to write a children's book as a group, the whole episode was set up like it was an episode of Leverage. It was a con job to set this up. And they had Neil Gaiman in it.
Mm.
As Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm.
As their sidekick. Like, because he wanted to be involved, and so they let him be involved, but he just, like, was their gopher. And then at the end, it turned out he had fooled them all so that he could get his name on the book.
Of course.
And that he's always done this, and in fact, he doesn't even know how to read. And it had one of my greatest episodes when he's convincing them all not to give up, and Homer turns to everybody and says, British Fonzie is right. And my heart grew wings and flew out of the window when they said that. Because as much as I love Neil Gaiman, as much as I get that that's iconic now, I've always looked at him and been like, so when you were a sophomore in high school, you just stopped changing your fashion for the rest of your life. I always find that a little bit weird. And he's totally, yeah, so he's British Fonzie, so yeah, I love that shit. Spinal Tap was on The Simpsons as though a real band.
Mm.
And that was early days. And I think of this because in the documentary I was talking about, Christopher Guest is one of the people talking, and he's talking about a situation that happened when they did a concert. They actually toured at Spinal Tap. And he says Spinal Tap, he says, which is a movie that I made a long time ago with two other guys. He basically is explaining it, and I'm like, oh, honey, we all know what... If we're watching this movie, we know what Spinal Tap is. But it's so sweet that you feel like we might not be sure. Like, oh. But yeah, Simpsons is some powerful shit. All right, let's do another one.
Okay.
Also anonymous.
Okay.
With the ubiquity of streaming, is buying music now obsolete?
I don't know. You know, it's not just music. There's, you know, a lot of things stream.
Oh yeah,
obviously.
Netflix.
And so one can ask the question if buying other types of media is obsolete or will be. You know, and of course, that's a question that people have been asking for many, many years now. And a lot of people in the industry have been very concerned about it. My observation is that it's kind of like
books,
like real books.
Yes.
You could ask the question, well, you know, with Kindle and all this stuff, and with ways for people to use those devices to get books for free, is that going to get rid of real books?
And then you remember they've been saying that since the invention of television.
Now, someone might argue that books are a little different because there's such a tactile experience going on there. But I think there's also an aspect of books that's not just about the tactile experience of turning the page and all that stuff that people talk about, but of collecting this thing. And I think that people do like to have a CD of the album of this stuff. I think people do like to have the Blu-ray of this movie. I think people do like to collect these things. It's like, I guess that's the best way I can explain it. It's a collection kind of, or a collector kind of impulse that I think goes along with any of the tactile things you can talk about. I mean, right now there's also a quality thing people will say. Well, you know, you can't. The best quality you can get is from that Blu-ray.
It sounds the best on a single,
or whatever. And you've got people saying that they like it best on vinyl.
Oh yeah, you totally do that.
So people are going to buy those.
Nobody really says it sounds the best on a single.
But so it seems like that's always going to be around. That there's always going to be someone who wants, either because of that collector aspect where they just want to look at their library of CDs, or they want to look at their library of movies or books, or there is some physical tactile aspect of it, or they just like the way it sounds better. Because, and whether or not there really is any noticeable difference or not, if they think there is, the market's going to be there.
But here's where I throw a twist in all of this, because that's how I feel, but for absolutely none of the reasons you just established. Because I very seldom buy anything physical anymore. I buy my music on iTunes, on my computer. Mm-hmm. I buy my books on Kindle. In fact, I recently got a Kindle instead of my Kindle Fire because the battery life is too low for reading books. So now I have a Kindle just for reading, because I almost all of my books now I read on Kindle. So I'm buying them all digital, mm-hmm. but I'm buying them.
That's true.
And I'm doing that on purpose. For some reason, I do not like... For some reason, I'm okay with it for Netflix. But in general, I don't want to do Spotify or Tidal or whatever the other ones are, Apple Music, that just let me listen to whatever I want as long as I keep subscribing. And the same thing even with books. Kindle has a thing now, Kindle Unlimited, where you can just use all their books. Not all, but a whole bunch of books if you pay a subscription or whatever. And for some reason, I don't like that. I like to buy it and have it, even if it's not a physical thing. So it's that same thing. I want to collect it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have it. But it doesn't have to be physical. I'm fine having the file, but I still purchase it.
Right. And that means you still have ownership of it, control over it. You can enjoy it when
you
want.
To a degree, but at the same time, I also don't, because like iTunes, you're technically not buying shit. If Apple loses the rights, you technically can't have it anymore.
Is that right?
I'm sure. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a thing. You're buying the right to listen to it or whatever. And I think that's true for a lot of them.
But as you point out, you're still buying it. So
yeah.
So. Even though the physical dimension of it is irrelevant to you, that owning it part is still...
Yes, but that's irrelevant. What I'm saying, yeah. All the stuff you described is not about quality, and it's not about anything physical, it's not about anything visual, but it's still that same ownership thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm a dinosaur. I don't know if this is becoming the end. And I mean, I don't want to go that route because the reason I brought up TV is this is a real thing. Since TV, people have been saying everything is going to be the death of books.
Yeah.
TV will be the death of books. Computers will be the death of books. The internet will be the death of books. Audiobooks will be the death of books. Tablets will be the death of books. So, and it's never happened. And so I don't think this is going to be the death of purchasing media. Even purchasing physical media, necessarily. But I do feel like there's a social change. And more people are like, why? As long as you... And I probably spend more for... Let's stick with music. I probably spend more on music than would cost to have a subscription to Spotify or something like that. And so, if I can get everything on Spotify, why am I doing it the other way?
I don't know.
Me neither. But I know that that's... it's not like I'm sitting here going, oh, I never did the math. I should go do Spotify. But
here's what we do know. That the math doesn't have anything to do with it. That's exactly what you would do.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the physicality also, in my case, the physicality and the quality also have nothing to do with
it. Right.
So I don't know what it is. But we know that there's a thing. So it's not obsolete. Or at least it won't fade away. It might be obsolete.
Well, I mean, you know, and I've known a lot of young people who...
You haven't known young people.
Oh, I've known lots of young people who are totally all about feeling entitled to get whatever they want for free in terms of music, movies, or whatever. But they'll still go spend their entire allowance on an album or a movie or a book or whatever. I mean, it still happens. Or if they're not into the physical aspects of it, like you're talking about, they'll still spend their whole allowance at iTunes or whatever else.
Yeah.
They'll still do it, and they still find value in doing that. You know, this reminds me of an article I read recently about how, you know, we're moving toward an economy, or we at least can move toward an economy. Maybe should move toward an economy. I think they were arguing that we were moving toward this economy where most of the things we need are going to be free, because, you know, there's going to be virtually no cost in creating them or producing them, and people are going to have access to them that's local and cheap or whatever, and eventually we're going to have most of the things that we pay for and that support our economy, we're just going to be able to get for free. And they speculated that then there wouldn't be an economy anywhere. There wouldn't be buying or selling or whatever. And they specifically pointed out that you can't have an economy based on buying music or art or whatever. And they just brushed that aside, and they went on to talk about how we're not going to have any economy.
Yeah, which is
bullshit. That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. You could absolutely have an economy based...
I think it has happened.
Completely based on the crafts that someone's working on in their garage. You can totally have an economy like that. And you will.
As long as you have supply and demand of anything.
Well,
you could have an economy based on hugs.
Yeah.
If you had lonely people and people who gave hugs.
Trade is something human beings do.
Yes.
Even if this person's right and you get rid of cash and banks, you're still going to have trade.
Absolutely.
And there's still going to be an economy.
There's
some
really fascinating speculative fiction that creates essentially reputation economies.
Sure. Whatever.
Eclipse Phase had a really cool version where a lot of these outer colonies in the outer solar system have developed reputation currency. So literally, you do things for people, and that gives you essentially points.
Right.
And you can do it. Well, and the Cory Doctorow book, the Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, which I still feel like you should read because it's a sci-fi thing where because it's a prestige thing, they're redoing the Haunted Mansion, and they're competing with another group who's trying to get in on it, the Haunted Mansion Disneyland. And in that world, they've discovered free energy, and so all needs are taken care of. And the only currency that matters now is called Muffy. And it's a currency of influence. And you get it by doing cool things. But to make the economy work, the people who do the shit job, like the people who are janitors and stuff, earn a lot. They get paid in Muffy and they get a lot of it because they're doing the crap nobody wants to do. But it's essentially, it is along these lines. It is an art-based economy, and it has ancillary things for people who don't make the art, but the whole basis is popularity and art and influence is the basis of the
economy.
Well,
and what I would argue is that we already have a fiat currency. We all have already have a currency that's not based on anything except
trust.
Market.
That's what I was taught in school.
So,
trust.
So there's no reason to expect that whatever people value in the future in terms of trade, that this that the currency we use now won't be used as that fiat. Basically, fiat currency just is basically just something that that lubricates the wheels of barter of trade.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What, you know what I'm saying? You ultimately we're just trading one good or service for another, and we're just using the fiat currency as a sort of a stand-in or a sort of a token
well,
for that.
And the fact that
and there's no reason we won't continue doing that forever, no matter what where the economy.
And the
goes.
Fact that we're buying and selling things now that aren't necessary. That's true.
That's right. So. In the
only situation where you potentially lose the economy is some weird world where we're all isolated in our own perfect holodecks.
Well,
and we all have identical things. And even then, something would find a way. There would be something unique in some situation, and somebody would want that thing.
That's right. Trade is part of the human it's not... Now, I'm constantly objecting to people who think trade and exchange is the foundation of all human experience. That's not true.
No, but material exchange is up there with other social
exchanges. It's right in there, and it's we're always going to do it. And there's always and for someone just to say, well, once this kind of trade or economy goes, we won't have economy, that's absurd.
Well, and I'll tell you
that's
who,
totally
who it was.
Absurd.
It was a futurist. I guarantee you it was a fucking probably. Futurist. Anybody who self-identifies as a futurist tends to piss me off. Because, and I get it, because you can't just be like, I don't know, and make a career out of that. But they're always like, oh, this is what'll happen in the future. I'm like, fuck you, you have no idea. Shut up. You're making a guess based on some stuff. You might be making a smarter guess than my nephew, who's 8, but you're still totally guessing. And frequently, you're not guessing off of real building blocks. You're guessing, you pick one theory and you're like, well, that will drive society. That one thing will clearly drive society. And yeah, if you think of only that thing, it'll do it. But well, and my favorite example always was, I told you, the futurist guy who said that humans would evolve and women would evolve to have really big eyes and huge breasts and very little body hair. Yeah. And I'm just like, there's so many things wrong with that.
Yeah.
We are over time and I'm sick of your face. So, if you would like to tell us what the future will be like, do it. Do it on our blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. I also like us on Facebook because we take joy in that. And write into the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, because that's how we stay afloat. That's we have an economy of emails. So enjoy that. And I don't know what we're going to call this episode, so... Last one was going to be She of the Beef. But I don't know what this one's going to be.
Okay.
All right. Good night, Gracie.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.